This episode is brought to you by Adobe XD. Adobe XD is the collaborative platform for experienced designers to design and prototype engaging user experiences. Stay tuned to hear how XD helped me make a product I'd been trying to get greenlit for nearly 4 years possible. Yes, 4 years.
You're thinking way too much on the side about what I should start with this line, where it should be, who am I, rather than just go do something, do anything. If I ever feel myself when I've done scenes that, God, I don't know what to do, I will just go out and I will mirror whatever the other person is doing. So if it looks like they're stacking boxes, I start stacking boxes. Getting that momentum going and just getting out there
gets you past that block that keeps you on the side.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. There's only two more official episodes left this season. There may be one surprise episode afterwards. Improv in UX? Yes, and with Mike Gorgone. I got to talk to Mike today all about improv in UX and what that means, because honestly, I really never thought I'd see those two words together, but Mike really does a great job of helping us understand how improv skills really, really are complementary to a UX team setting for both collaboration and creativity and culture. It was really, really fun, really enlightening. And I also want to mention that for the very first time, I have a co-host with me on today's episode, and it's none other than my friend and fellow podcaster of the Sensational Thunder Nerds podcast, Frederick Von Weiss. So one thing I did learn today is that I kind of suck at improv right now. I have a growth mindset, so I know I can get better at it if I really, truly try. So yes, and go ahead and sit back, relax, unless you're doing something active while actively listening. See what I did there? And enjoy this entirely unscripted episode all about improv and UX. Well, greetings, User Defenders, and welcome. This is a very special episode today, and this is all about improv and UX. Two words I never thought I would see together, but I'm super excited that we have Mike Gorgone. Is that correct, Mike?
That
with us
correct.
To talk all about it. And guess what? For the very first time ever, I have a co-host with me helping me ask some really smart and curious questions to Mike today. And that is the one and only Frederick Philip Von Weiss of Thunder Nerds Podcast. Hi, Frederick.
Hey, Jason. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here. This is a great opportunity. I'm really happy to join you and talk to Mike.
Well, thank you so much, man. Good to have you here. And Mike, welcome to User Defenders. We are super excited to have you on the show today, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me and the invite. I'm excited to spread the improv gospel to everyone in the UX community. I've been doing that now for about a year and a half. Did some workshops at UX Week and Midwest UX and down here locally with IXDA Atlanta and Ladies at UX Atlanta. So there's been a small but growing community of people in the UX world that I've been able to talk about improv to and take them through a lot of improv exercises.
So I'm curious, what got you into improv? You touched on it, you started on it, but what was it about improv that drew you in?
When I first started, or what drew me to go take the classes?
I guess let's go back to just what drew you into the classes. Like before UX, before kind of figuring out this marriage, which I'd want to learn more about too, your aha moment there, but kind of what drew you into improv? And then what was the aha moment where you realized that bringing improv into a UX design process was beneficial?
Okay. Well, you know, living in Chicago, I'd been to Second City shows, and, you know, they're all, you know, almost always hilarious and a lot of fun to go to. And, you know, that was kind of it until my friend said, oh, I think we had been to a show, and he said, oh, well, they have classes. And I was like, they have classes to learn how to do this? Wow, that sounds really kind of interesting. And I grew up on the original Saturday Night Live in the 80s and all that stuff. So
I love that.
Once
best seasons ever, 80s. Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Phil Hartman was king. He was one of the guys, I think they called him, his nickname was Glue, because like no matter what they put him in, he would glue together the skit and make it work. And then Will Ferrell apparently took over that position. But once I went to the website, you know, they listed all those people. I was like, oh, all these people have been through Second City. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I got to find out more about this. So signed up and took classes and, you know, was hooked pretty much from the beginning. We had classes Monday night. We had a great group of people, like 8 to 10 people to start off with. And it let me, you know, say to everybody, which was my kind of like running joke, is how many people get to look forward to Monday? Because like every Monday night we got together for 3 hours down at Second City and got to, you know, take our classes. And so as it progressed, once I got to my third level, one of our teachers, Bob Cullen, who is actually also a business improv guy, he does stuff with Duke's Fuqua School. He was looking for volunteers for the Gildas Club benefit. It was going to be like a 24-hour improv-a-thon where all the best improvisers in the city were going to come and, you know, raise money for a charity. And so I volunteered to go do it, and I volunteered for all 24 hours of it. And I saw a group that Bob was in called Baby Wants Candy, and they do a one-act improvised musical. So as they like to say, everything's improvised, the singing, and then they'll put in air quotes, the dancing / choreography and music is all improvised. So they've got a piano player that's on the side, and he kind of gets a read on the scene, and he'll start, you know, an intro to a song and start playing music, and they will make up the lyrics on the spot. Well, they had all their A players there that night, and I was just like, my jaw was on the ground. I was totally blown away about how they did this. And I asked Bob about it afterwards, and he's like, oh yeah, well, we perform at Improv Olympic, and that's kind of what took me from Second City to Improv Olympic. So they had Wednesday night free nights at that point. So on Wednesdays I started going there, and then once I finished at Second City, I transferred over to IO, and just, you know, learning, seeing all this collaboration, how this people who have different backgrounds, which is a lot of why I like UX. The people in UX remind me a lot of the improv people, where, you know, you have developers, you have visual designers, you have also, you know, people from backgrounds in psychology, all these different people with all these different points of views and different backgrounds coming together to create something out of nothing. And I feel like that's a nice connection to user experience. And not only are they creating something, that something is only going to exist for the 20, 30, 40 minutes of that show, and then it will be gone forever. And so once you see a couple of good shows, you're like, get really hooked of like, wow, that's the only time I'm ever going to see that. I don't want to miss it because something really amazing may happen the next night. So yeah, that was probably the biggest moment that pulled me into the improv scene.
I'm curious, what was the aha moment for you, Mike, when you kind of took these two seemingly disparate areas, at least on the surface, and you're like, hey, what if I applied improvisation to the design process? Like, what was the aha moment? Can you take us back and tell us kind of what happened there?
Sure. That was starting to go to conferences. I saw people speak. Probably one of the biggest ones was, you just had her on the podcast, which is what led me to, you know, reaching out to you, was Denise Jacobs. I saw her at Giant Conference back in Charleston when she was there, and she brought up, you know, was talking about creativity. I was like, oh, this sounds like a really interesting talk. And she mentioned in there talking about taking improv classes and how there's this really cool thing called Yes And. And it's this awesome thing where you like learn how to accept what people are giving to you and build on it. So hearing her talk about improv, and then I saw other people in their talks mentioning empathy, and we want to be, how can we be more creative, and how can we collaborate together to be more creative? And I'm like, well, that's improv. That's improv. Well, that's an improv skill. Listening without judging, that's an improv skill. Learning how to not judge your own ideas, that's improv. So the more conferences I went to and the more I heard people mentioning all these terms, I was like, this is like totally a natural fit between the two of them. And then after that, I reached back out to my good friend Jim Carwish. You probably saw his name on the site. I went through Improv Olympic with him in Chicago, and he is here in Atlanta. He's from Atlanta, doing applied improvisation. So his day job is to go into companies, and he works kind of probably like a broader range of things, not necessarily focused on UX. That's where I came into play on that. But he goes in and uses improv to help upper management communicate better, and do a lot of the same stuff, communicate with people, collaborate, come up with more, you know, quote unquote, innovative ideas and all that stuff.
Are you also presenting at these workshops?
Jim's no, that's his thing. So like I said, I'm more focused on the conferences, and he's out doing it on a daily basis, working within other companies. So I guess I could say I'm like maybe more the tip of the spear and getting people introduced to improv, and then he takes the ball and runs with it from there.
Gotcha. And you guys are writing a book as well, right?
Correct.
On this topic?
We've been collaborating on that idea for a little bit, and we finally got the ball rolling. We're probably about a third of the way through it, kind of getting the general outline and just starting to like throw out a lot of ideas. We'd like the book to it's not going to be a super, super in-depth look at UX at the detail level and all of that. We'd like it to be for anyone who maybe has never heard of UX to give them a good idea of what the process is and what it all entails. But we want to kind of lay out the process of each of the different phases from, you know, discovery to, you know, or kickoff to discovery to research to collaboration, and then coming up with the ideas and the ideation part of it, and showing where improv connects to all of those things. And then also listing out and going over some exercises that you can use to help build those skills for those different areas.
I would love to know some of the touch on some of the topics that you have in these workshops. Like, and if you don't mind, if we just kind of bring these up and you could touch on these, like introduction to improv fundamentals.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
What does that look like?
So we'll, for that section, you know, we've kind of got an improv section at the beginning of the workshop, and in there we'll go through some warm-ups, and the warm-ups are usually to kind of get the jitters out of everybody, because everyone's usually nervous. They're like, oh my God, we're doing improv. What does this all going to mean? So there's a few exercises just to get the jitters out, get them warmed up, get them listening. And that will usually lead into some exercises for non-judgment. And then that will go from non-judgment to listening to agreement. That's usually the start of the workshop. And then I'll usually move over to the connection section. So there's improv exercises that help people to connect better. So, I mean, and this is a basic actor exercise of like just mirroring. You know, you have two people stand across from each other and they have to mirror each other, and you'll have one of them be number one and number two is the other one, and you'll have number one lead for a little bit. And it always turns into like a frantic, frenetic thing where people are like going super fast and I have to calm them down, because the point isn't necessarily to go so fast to make the other person try to keep up. It's actually just kind of, you know, maybe more like Tai Chi, where you're moving slowly and getting in sync, and then you'll have number two lead. And then eventually it'll lead to either person can lead, which is kind of interesting, because you'll see the people moving and you're moving along with them. And then all of a sudden your head, you decide, I want to move this way. And the other person all of a sudden realizes, oh, you're leading. Now I'm going to follow what you're doing. And you'll see it kind of move back and forth, and that connection build between the two people. So
that's like listening with your whole body.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Absolutely. So from connection, it'll go to empathy. And from empathy building, we get trust, because you can't really trust someone until, you know, you feel that they get you, you know, and that's kind of part of what the empathy is. You're walking in their shoes and you really kind of understand them. And then from the connection section, we move on to a collect portion, which focuses on awareness exercises and then also patterns and themes, because a lot of what improv does is it looks for interesting patterns or themes. An improv show will open and talk about different ideas and themes. So the most simple opening could possibly be just word association. So you could get a suggestion from the audience and the group just starts throwing out random words and it's word association. But from there, you'll see patterns and themes kind of emerge, and people will start using words that are more focused on those themes and patterns. And from there, they'll base the show kind of on what those themes are. And it may not have anything to do with what the suggestion was. So that's kind of what I teach for that section. And that's kind of geared towards when you're listening to users. And say you interviewed six users during the day and listening to what they're all saying. And you're eventually going to focus in on like, wow, everyone's talking about, you know, this one part of the site that's giving them a problem. You know, it may not be quite that obvious, but focusing on that kind of stuff. And then from there, it goes into the converge phase of the workshop. And that talks about creativity and ideation. So we'll do exercises that are based on that. And then we'll usually wind it up after everything is meant to build on the previous exercises to do an exercise that's actually one of my favorites. And it's also seems to always really go well for students, just because it's kind of fun. And I can always kind of guess or I should say age myself, or like get an idea of how old my workshop people are, because I have to start how more recent I have to go when I'm talking about this exercise. Because the easiest one for us to probably think of is like When Harry Met Sally, when the couples are sitting on the couch telling the story of how they met.
I thought you were going to mention the restaurant scene. This is a family show. Yeah. Easy.
So it's called The Interview. And so basically you'll have two people sit in a chair and they pretend they're speaking out to a camera that's filming them, and they're playing two people who like and know each other, and they tell a story based on a suggestion that I'll get from everybody else in the workshop. And so I have yet to have it really, you know, where people got stalled. They almost always seem to have fun with it, and they, you know, I tell them it's kind of like it's like, you know, tennis. You're hitting it back and forth. Someone gives a line, the next person gives a line. Well, then you build on that line, and together you tell this short little story for 1 minute. And that is kind of like the culmination of everything we've talked about previously in the workshop, building up to that moment. And that one I make completely voluntary, because that one is a little bit scary, because you're getting up in two chairs in front of everybody else in the workshop. So they don't have to do that part if they don't want to, because I totally get that one's a little bit more stressful. But everything else is either one-on-one or everyone else broken out into groups of 6 to 8 people. And part of it is that everybody's doing everything. So, and then in those parts of the workshops, no one's kind of like having to get out in front of everybody and do something and worrying about being funny. And usually within 2 to 3 minutes, everyone's laughing and having a good time. And I think, as I mentioned to Frederick earlier, fun kills fear, which is a good quote from an improv friend of mine.
Love that.
Greg Tavares, who's in Charleston. He's used that in a talk where he mentions that, you know, once you're having fun, the fear kind of just actually just vanishes.
That's very insightful. I love how the whole gist of the core of improv, like it's all about listening, acceptance, non-judgment, empathy, trust, connection, how all of that fits into what we do as user experience designers. And when you go into, say, a company meeting and you have egos that are combative and don't provide that acceptance and building upon, you might not get to a good answer or a valuable answer. Sometimes the best way to build value is, you know, on top of a pile of bad ideas, at the very tippy top, you'll get a really good idea. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to have acceptance and non-judgment.
Right, right. If you're willing to explore the idea, you really don't know where it could go. It could go anywhere. And as it grows, it could get to that interesting place that you're like, oh, wait, this solution actually will work. And even like I mentioned with the opening of an improv show, whatever that initial suggestion was that they build off of that could end up not even being mentioned again. But whoever maybe had that first idea in the meeting, they're going to feel connected to it because, hey, I contributed to this and it helped everyone grow this other idea, even if it maybe wasn't what my initial idea was.
Yeah, I'm curious, Mike, where does improv fit into the design process? Like, what have you noticed so far? To me, it seems like, and this is me again, just learning as I go, this is mm-hmm. all very new to me, but it would seem to me that improv is maybe like incorporating that these exercises is maybe something that happens early in the design process. And I'm not gonna assume, but I'm curious, is that when does it happen, and does it only happen in the beginning, or should it happen throughout the whole life cycle?
I would say it is probably more geared towards the beginning, but also the middle. Anytime you're going to be interacting with the rest of the team or anyone outside of the team, I think those skills are valuable. When you're doing design reviews and you're looking to get, you know, information from your teammates back, and if you're going in there to help them, your thought in your head is, I'm not going in here to destroy this design. I'm going in here to add to it. And how can I make it better and make them look like a rock star? I mean, that's kind of like one of the mantras, is to play from the top of your intelligence and make your scene partner look like they're a genius. So I try to take that mindset into a lot of what I'm doing. So it may not necessarily be like I have this specific skill that's going to help me, you know, create the next greatest, you know, slide control, but I think it's just more of the mindset that you go into that makes you more open to helping everybody else. And that will, I believe, come back once you're, you know, oh wow, Mike helped me this last time. Next time he comes in and asks me for, you know, my input, I'm going to be more than happy to give him my thoughts.
Yeah, that could be anywhere. It could be in the stages of a design sprint. It could be throughout little aside conversations here and there. I love that.
And a lot of people, you know, Frederick, you mentioned pushback because everyone's like, oh, I can't like just agree to everything. We're supposed to just say yes all the time. And we're not asking them to like say yes to everything. We're just asking them to be open to exploration, because that's where that part really kind of comes into it. Because eventually, yes, you do get to the point of, okay, we've got this set of ideas. Now what do we do? And that's at the point where you can, you know, do things like dot voting or other things that are going to narrow down the list to prioritize them, because, hey, yeah, we do have so much budget, or we only have so much time, or, you know, we've got a development staff that can only get this much done. What can we get done? But, you know, hopefully at that point, if you're using, you know, that mindset, you've gotten to something that is really good that will end up being developed by the developers.
I love that you brought that up, because we could always talk about the yes and concept, mm-hmm. the way communication skills are based on contribution and collaboration. Do you mind kind of briefly touching on that for the audience?
For the collaboration part of it, or just
well,
in general?
How the yes and concept works and how that's relevant to this.
So, yeah. So when we are doing the workshop, the basic introductory, you know, yes and exercise, you know, and this is whether you're taking improv classes or, you know, doing this, it can be a little stilted, but it is literally called yes and. And if we want, you guys can do this exercise as well. It's where you'll have two people, you know, line up across from each other. And
we're two people. We
yes,
can do it.
You are. And you are lined up visually.
Me.
On my screen.
you.
Pick me, Mike. Pick me and pick Frederick.
Oh, my hand's up.
You two, come on stage. Come on stage.
Okay,
okay.
Here we go.
Okay, so
I'm sitting in a chair.
The gist of this exercise is obviously yes and. So what I'm going to have you guys do is do like a 3-line to a 5-line scene. And while this is very, stilted is the best word, but it's very contrived. And you would never do a scene like this. But the point of the exercise is to get you listening and understanding, and then responding by adding more information to it.
So I've been trying to get an internal product built for nearly 4 years now, don't ask. And it finally got greenlit recently. The kicker? Due to a large business pivot on the IT side, the dev team has a very limited time window to build out the MVP. Well, thanks to Adobe XD, I already had the blueprints. I was able to quickly design, test, and gather feedback on my prototypes before the business decision was even made. So the next time your stakeholders or engineers like Howard Hughes say, "Show me all the blueprints," you can confidently fire up Adobe XD and say, "Here they are." Don't wait 4 years. Download XD for free and experience design already ahead of its time at userdefenders.com/XD.
So,
active listening.
Yes, active listening. One of you will give a line. The other one will say yes. Repeat the line. Throw an and in there and add your new piece of information to it. So
we're just building on the story.
Exactly. So a quick example, and I'll kind of like do both parts of it here. So if I were to give the first line, I might say something along the lines of, "I think we should go get pizza for dinner." "Yes, I do think we should go get pizza for dinner. And I have a coupon for buy one, get one free." "Yes, you do have a coupon for buy one, get one free. And remember last time we were there, we had a big argument with the owner because the coupon was expired." "Yes, I do remember the last time we were there, we had that big argument with the owner because it was expired. And this time I made sure that the coupon is good to go." So it's just something basic like that where you're telling a story together, but you're advancing it with new information. And again, the point isn't to be funny, but like literally you're making it up on the spot. But your next line with that "and" is inspired by the previous line. Yes.
Ooh, can I go first? I got something.
Yes.
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Do you want us to come up with a scenario, or do you want to throw one out at us?
No, you guys can totally come up with it on your own based on the first line of dialogue. And
all right, ready.
Whenever you're ready. So Frederick's
going to
start.
Looks like Frederick's ready to go, man.
I'm so excited by this.
I'm nervous. I'm not good at this stuff.
You should be. I got a good one.
It is okay to be nervous. So whenever you're
in scene.
Right.
Wait, is that the beginning of the end?
Just go. Scene is the end. So we'd call scene at the end.
Yeah, you call
so
scene. Okay.
Go.
Jason, I think that we should start using oil paints for all of our wireframe from now on the company's projects. What do you think?
Yes, and if we use oil paints, maybe we can try to see who else on the team has some artistic backgrounds. That might be interesting.
That's a great idea. I know Joshua has been an accomplished artist for 27 years, and he already has a can of linseed oil, so we could get started.
Yes, and I think that the business analysts are going to really love this.
And scene. Okay, good job. So for our yeses, we want to try and repeat that line back to the person. So when we say, you know, like I said, with my yes, or not, I'm sorry, I think we should go get pizza tonight. Yes, I do think we should go get pizza tonight. Because what that conveys is, if I can repeat that line back, I'm letting you know I heard you.
This is
what you said to me. I listened to this. Because it's really easy to get ahead of yourself as you're listening to them. And, here's an idea. This idea is going to be awesome. And you just kind of jump right to it. So it's the yes, repeating it so that the person knows they've been listened to and understood. And then, and you add on your other piece of information. And to make it even easier for yourself, if you keep it short and sweet. One idea, because I know a lot of beginning improvisers, a lot of times they'll throw out like 5 to 6 ideas and it's like 3 or 4 sentences. And now the other person has to try and process all of that information, which can be overwhelming to try and pick out which idea, what I don't know what to respond to. There was 4 things that he just mentioned. And now I've forgotten the first 2 things because I'm sitting here thinking about all of this. And oh my God, it's been 5 seconds since somebody said anything and I'm dying up here. Somebody please call scene. So
thank you for rescuing us. This is such a stretch out of my comfort zone. And I think that's the point.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
And like, how do you coach somebody like me? Like, I mean, I'm an interviewer, like Frederick's an interviewer. We do podcasts. So like being an active listener is a really important part of being a successful interviewer, of course. But how do you encourage or coach someone like me? Who's just like, I don't have the confidence to just like getting up on a stage and doing this in front of a bunch of people. Like that is like a big fear,
right?
For sure. But how do you coach somebody like me who just wants to do this, wants to be a lot more in the moment and kind of just pull random thoughts and ideas out of nowhere? Like, how do you coach somebody like me who's challenged with this?
Yeah, that a lot of that has to, that goes towards the non-judgment. And because it's not even just judging other people's ideas, that usually stems from the person's fear of judging their own ideas and whether or not it's going to be a good idea, or in, you know, in the case if it's on stage, whether it's going to be funny and interesting. And like I said, like a huge character, that is almost, it's almost always fear-based of worrying about coming up with that perfect thing, which is why, you know, I don't believe in, you know, the lone designer. I don't worry about coming up with the perfect thing because I'm going to take it to my teammates and they're going to help me make it better. So it's letting go of that ego and worrying about stuff that, you know, we are our own worst enemies as far as improv goes. And so an exercise I have everybody do in the workshop when they're in the group circle, and I always freely admit to them that this exercise scares the hell out of me. It makes me uncomfortable every time we do it because I cannot sing to save my life. I have no singing ability whatsoever, but the exercise is called Musical Hotspot, and they're in the circle, and one person has to jump into the middle of the circle and start singing any song randomly. Now, this is to build trust in your fellow circle people.
I see, just for the audio listeners, if you don't mind me interjecting, Jason is raising his hand violently because he wants to sing.
I've been known to sing. Couldn't we have started with that exercise? And I could have let my ego out a little more. Now, this is good. This is ego, good ego killing. And your ego is not your amigo, is what I always say.
Nobody should actually probably get out more than like probably 2 to 3 words of whatever song they're trying to sing, because someone will come out, tap them on the shoulder, and take over the hot spot. So at best, you're singing maybe 1, 2, or 3 words out of whatever song you're singing. And you learn that, hey, everyone's here to support and trust me, so it's not really a big deal. And you jump into the circle, sing your 2 or 3 seconds, if that, someone taps you out. And that is a good way, because like everyone, and trust me, like I said, it makes me so uncomfortable, that exercise. It's ridiculous. But I convince myself whenever I have to do it that I know I'm not going to be out there that long, and someone will come to my rescue, if you will. Someone's going to support me by tapping me on the shoulder. So there's a lot of stuff in improv that goes towards trying to make everyone more comfortable and not worry so much about having to come up with the perfect line or, you know, the perfect ending to a scene and all of that stuff. It's just going to evolve how it evolves, and that's the way it was supposed to go.
Can we try that exercise to Nickelback's Photograph?
That's for Steve and his Nickelback suggestion.
Steve should be in here too.
But it could lead to
photograph.
More. Nobody tapped you out yet.
Nickelback has not.
Every time I do, it makes me laugh.
I hope your guy puts in the music in the background for this part.
Look at this photograph. Every time I do, it makes me laugh.
I think it's about not taking yourself too seriously and being open and being willing to share your ideas. And like you said, Mike, it's not about holding things back and judging yourself. And, you know, as you also said, you could be your own worst enemy, but get any ideas out there on the table so we could just start getting ideas. And if it's that non-judgmental environment, we could take some inspiration from things here and there and find the value in that and build upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In improv land, that's called, you know, you're in your head. You're thinking way too much on the side about what I should start with this line, where it should be, who am I, rather than just, there's like, just go do something, do anything. And if I ever feel myself when I've done scenes that, I like, God, I don't know what to do, I will just go out and I will mirror whatever the other person is doing. So if it looks like they're stacking boxes, I start stacking boxes. If it looks like they're cooking something, I start going over and look like I'm, cutting vegetables or something. I join what they're doing because they're doing something, and is, getting that momentum going and just getting out there gets you past that block that keeps you on the side.
Yeah. I love this. And this is so like innovative and new, like these ideas, and really not talked about that much. That's why I'm glad we're doing this and talking about this. I think a lot of the defenders listening are their horizons are being expanded. And I think they're going to want to try to bring some of these exercises in to their environments and to their teams. And, but here's the thing, and I just did it. I just said here, but I just I didn't yes and my own statement, but I do have a concern about this, and it's just that there's a lot of teams, there's a lot of cultures that just where teams don't feel safe, especially in the creative environments, right? Because we're kind of expected to come up with ideas, like as creative people, it's mm-hmm. just like, oh yeah, just. The creative people will make it look pretty. The creative people will come up with this tagline or this marketing campaign or this UI or, just pass it over to the creative people. But unfortunately, and a lot of times because of culture, and culture trickles down always. And so maybe because of poor leadership or people just don't, I think that a lot of people, especially newer designers, they don't feel comfortable. They don't feel safe enough to, even though they want to, but they just don't feel safe in those environments. Like, what do you mm-hmm. say to that?
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I think when we've spoken, I'm reading Creativity Inc. right now by Ed Catmull.
Oh, yeah. Great book.
And he mentions that in there that, they've made it a point at Pixar to make sure everybody actually really understands that, it is safe to express themselves and their ideas, and that they don't think of failure as a failure. It's really just, it's an experiment and learning. And because they have worked to, make that the mindset, that people are more free to express ideas because they know that, they're not going to, get crushed, if the idea doesn't end up working. So I think that's definitely a key part of it. You definitely want, the leadership to be working towards that atmosphere of trying to make sure people that are collaborating trust each other. And that's where a lot of these exercises come. A lot of it's like, trust. We don't necessarily trust you guys, so we're not going to maybe give you all the information. So we, I think on our part in the UX side of things, if you know, we're reaching out in this manner and including them more rather than just like, you know, we're the designers. You guys just go over there and let us do our thing and we'll come back to you with it and make them part of the process. And they see that you're working in this manner. I think that can go a long way to overcoming a lot of that. Make sure the BAs are there and that you're sincerely asking them for their opinion. Let them know that, like, I'm going to go work on a design for this. I'm not asking you to design it, but I need your input as to what's important to this project that you can help me with. So I think if we kind of go in there with that sort of like that humble attitude of like, we're here to work with you. How can we do that? How can we make your life easier with our solutions and our work? I think that can go a long way to establishing that trust and that connection with them so that they're more willing to work with us.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I've said it before. If you have to say, because I'm the designer, you've just proven that you're not. Right?
Yeah.
I think that, and honestly, like, and I'll raise my hand. Like, a lot of it had to do with lack of confidence as a newer designer, mm-hmm. you know, kind of feeling like I've got to be right about everything. And it's really that lack of self-confidence and in passing the buck and everything. So, like, it's always like, well, I'm the professional. I'm the, you know, you don't tell a pool cleaner how to clean a pool. You don't tell a designer how to design it. You know, and that's just, it comes from insecurity. And it comes from ego and all the things that antithetical to improvisation. And so I think that's what I really love about this conversation. I think it's drawing all of this out. And I hope even if one team is changed from hearing this, even if one team can let their guard down and be more vulnerable, more humble. And I love also in UX, just the whole movement of diversity, bringing more ideas in, you know, ethnicity, bring age. Like, I think IDEO is really known for hiring senior citizens to be a part of their design team. What a great idea to bring somebody in that, you know, could be very well be using your product and hear from them, like kind of an edge case, so to speak, right?
Right, right. And a lot of that.
Yeah, not all your users are 24.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And it all kind of starts with, that listening, the non-judgment, and the empathy. And, I have an empathy story from like my first level class of improv that like just, like literally like slap me in the face. No, well, not literally, but it felt like a slap in the face. And it's like, it was an awesome moment, but also a moment that I am like, it just makes me feel horrible when I think about it. Cause we did a scene and, I can't remember what the suggestion was, but it was, me and another, improviser, classmate. And the suggestion was, I think, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was supposed to be two gay men at an airport. And I'll just leave it at, we did a horrible job playing stupid stereotypes that are horrible. And one of my classmates was gay and we talked to it afterwards. And I literally saw the look on his face and it made me feel like complete and utter crap. And I apologized to him profusely. Cause I was like, you know what? That was just terrible. All that stuff up there was just, out of desperation to try and be funny. And, I'm never going to let that happen again. And he appreciated that. And he was a great guy. And after that, I've made it a point to, play characters, honest and real. And, that like was probably within like the third class. And, it was like such a huge learning experience of, witnessing the effect that something can have on someone right then and there, and then taking that and growing from it. And I tell my students now, a lot of them, I've worked with high school kids, that play from the top of your intelligence and don't play stereotypes. If one of you should happen to walk in and, you're playing with like a higher pitched voice, they're playing a female. Don't make them the stereotype, play honest and play real people. And that is so much better than trying to go for the gag that you think is going to make something funny.
Yeah, well said. I love that.
Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that story. So what do you say to us? Like, should we try to like learn? And I'm blown away by like the Whose Line Is It Anyway people. Like, they can just take objects or they can just riff. And it's like, does it help to just know a lot about a lot to do this stuff? Does it make you better at improv? Or
I think, everybody kind of brings, I think that, and that gets where you're, again, to worrying about whether or not it's going to be interesting and am I creative in this type of thing. And, there's, if you've either listened to Dear Evan Hansen, the Broadway musical.
Negative.
Or heard of it.
I have not.
Okay, so the final song in there, he opens up and the character Evan Hansen like apparently like writes letters to himself. I haven't seen it yet, but I've listened to the musical on Spotify a ton. And he's writing a letter to himself and he brings up, you know, "Dear Evan Hansen, today is going to be a good day because you are you and that's enough." And I try to tell, you know, people that I'm teaching improv to, is like, you are enough. You are bringing a whole lifetime worth of experience and point of view to whatever the scenes are. And you have enough in your background. You improvise every day when you go to work and you're having conversations with people. None of that stuff is pre-planned. All of your interactions, if you go to the store, you're improvising. You are doing all that stuff on the spot. None of that was pre-planned. None of your conversations were, you know, you had them written down when you went into the office. We're always improvising. So, you know, that's what I try, you know, to work to. And, you know, for that kind of stuff, I'll have them do little exercises where I'll have them, you know, hey, when you're walking around and, you know, when you're at Starbucks, you know, find some random thing on the wall, like a poster, and then just do a quick word association of like four or five things. What does that make you think of? What does that word make you think of? What does that word make you think of? And, you know, if you just kind of do little stuff like that, you'll get a little bit better doing that kind of association of connecting things together. And a lot of times students will come back and say, "Oh my God, I was at home, like, you know, the day after our class, and I thought of this great line that would have worked awesome in that scene, you know, in class last week." And
how often do we say, "I wish I would have said that," like after a conversation? Yeah.
So I tell them, don't be disappointed by that. That's just your brain when you're not putting pressure on yourself, actually doing what it likes to do. So, you know, if you keep doing this and, you know, keep having faith that as long as you keep working at it and you get used to just being okay with not knowing, that time will switch from the next day to driving home from the class, to right after class, to a couple scenes later when you're sitting on the side, to eventually probably happening in the scene. So I like to, you know, use that as a confidence booster. You know, you were capable of it. You were just kind of sitting there letting your mind wander and it came up with a really cool, interesting idea that you could have used, you know, 2 days ago. But if you just let go and try to not let your fears take over, that time frame will shorten.
Hi, I'm Matt Marquis. And Lord only knows what I do day to day, but somehow websites come out and I fight for the users. You're listening to the User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
Yeah, practice is everything. Hey, Mike, you know, one of the big things I want to ask you, and I would hate to miss this, is what's one of the ways that we could use this in the field? Now, like everybody that's already listened to this episode, what's maybe one or two really good takeaways that they could employ at their office the next time they go in and say, you know what? You know what would be great if I could help alter the culture in this kind of fashion? What could they do?
Well, we can do an exercise for that right now. And this is something, one that everyone can use. And I use this one at the beginning of the workshop. And sometimes in the beginning, it can be used for listening and empathy, depending on what I want to stress. And that's the nice thing about the improv exercises is that a lot of them have multiple skills that you can focus on. And you can reuse them and say, okay, this time I want you to focus on this skill. But this one's a good listening and empathy, and it's called Empty Your Pockets. And this can be used, in my opinion, for whether or not the group is new, like it's a new project and everyone's kind of in the room for the first time and getting to know each other, or even an existing group, because you may learn something interesting about someone you've been working with and didn't know this, you know, for a long time. So I'll have both of you find an object around you or on your person that is personal to you. I won't use it right now, but like I use my wedding ring as an example, and I go through that when I'm at the workshops. So something that's personal to you, and then each of you will take a turn telling the story of that object for 1 minute. And the other person's job is to just listen again actively and absorb. Try to keep those urges to, you know, interrupt from, you know, making you speak, or, you know, something that causes your mind to wander off to something else. You know, if you mentioned, you know, I got this keychain at Disney World, and that causes your mind to wander, like when you maybe were at Disney World with your family. You know, it's really focusing on the story the other person's telling you and connecting to them about their story on this object. So if you guys have your object, Frederick's got his, so I will have him go first. And you're going to tell Jason the story of this object for about a minute, If it doesn't go a minute, that's fine. We don't have to actually go for the full minute. but if we do hit a minute, I will call time. And then it will flip-flop, and Jason can do the opposite. So when you are ready, Frederick, go.
Okay, I picked my Fitbit because it's the first thing I looked at, and it helps me get away from the screen, which is a big thing. It's important for me to have other interests outside of work, outside of the computer, to focus on my health and get out of my head. So this really helps because I could read tech articles all day, I could do tutorials all day, but if I could get out and get a run or hit the gym and I could get out of my head, I could re-energize, that's great for me. So this motivates me to get out there. I could track everything. It gamifies everything. It helps me track my heart rate, my weight, my food. I could do challenges with friends for like steps. So it's a great motivator for me. And health is important for me because I have a 4-year-old and I want to be fit and healthy by the time he's 14 and I could keep up with him and play sports and all that. And I'm 44, just like Jason almost is too. So I'm trying to stay active and fit. So I really enjoy my Fitbit.
Scene. Awesome. That is, there was so much fantastic information in there that, you know, we learned about you, you know, even in 1 minute, you know, we learned a bunch more about you than we've talked about in the last, you know, 50 minutes or so. That was fantastic. That was a perfect example of going through that exercise and telling you, you know, not just what it is, but why it's important to you and what it means. And that was fantastic. That was perfect. So Jason, whenever you are ready, if you have your object.
Yeah, I do. I have a fortune. I have a fortune that I carry around with me in my wallet. I even like taped it to keep it. It says, "You have tasted both the bitterness as well as the sweetness of coffee." And when I got that fortune, I just was like, how did they know? You know, like that is so true. I've had a really, really good cup of coffee and I've had a really, really bad cup of coffee. And I think that the contrast is you don't really know what a good cup of coffee tastes like until you've had a bad cup. And so and vice versa, I suppose. So what a lot of people don't realize is that coffee is a perishable product. Like, I don't care how much, and I love Pete's coffee. As you know, I have a story another day I'll tell that story. But Starbucks and Pete's coffee, you can't put coffee in a bag and grind it and put it on a shelf for 6 months and expect it to be sweet. You can't. It's just not realistic. It's not real. And so, That's one of the realities is that coffee is perishable. And I know that because I roast coffee at home. And if I leave it in my container too long, I could start to taste the bitterness of it. So that's what's helped me appreciate. Coffee is supposed to be sweet. It actually is supposed to have a subtle sweetness. And a lot of people don't realize that because they haven't had a really good cup of coffee yet. And so one of my goals in life is, thank you.
That's good. No, that's awesome. We learned it. You know, we learned more about you and your love of coffee. And I didn't know that. I actually did not know that coffee was supposed to be slightly sweet because it always tastes bitter to me.
Thank you.
So
it's true.
Yeah. We, you know, and that's what we love about, you know, this exercise. You get to tell a story. And that's so cool that you carry the fortune around with you, you know, in your wallet. And I mentioned this to Frederick. When I did this exercise at Midwest UX 2 years ago, I did my wedding ring like I always do with, you know, we had an odd number. So one woman and I teamed up on this. And this is, I think, a good example of how this exercise can connect you to someone. Because 2 years later, I still remember this story. And this is such a cool story. So since I did my ring, she did her ring. And she talked about it and how she bought it. And, you know, she was really happy when she bought it. And I think it had some little like things on it. And she said she remembers one day where she like kind of like waved her hand or knocked something around and it knocked out one of the pieces. And she was like so bummed about it. And she's like, oh, now I got to like, you know, should I keep this? Should I get rid of it? And then she decided that, you know, I've gone through life and I've had things happen to me that, you know, have dinged me. And, you know, but they're what make me me. And so she decided to keep the ring because it was a reminder to her that, you know, things happen that can, you know, leave marks, but that's what made her ring unique. And that's what these things are that make her unique. And I just thought that was such an awesome, awesome story. And it helped me to connect to her because we all talked about her rings. And I remember it 2 years later. And I know that she takes, personal experience, very seriously as to how it makes her who she is.
I love that. That's that character, how you build upon experience, and you might have some of those scars along the way, but that's the things that you hold on to preciously for context. The same way Jason was talking about the coffee throughout his life and a bad cup of coffee versus a good cup of coffee. And the only way you know is by if you had a bad cup of coffee. It's that context of life, and that's how you appreciate the good things, the things that you hold back.
Yeah, that sentiment totally reminded me of a line from the movie called Let It Ride with Richard Dreyfuss. Not a lot of people have seen it. It's like one of those movies that the more you watch it, it becomes kind of a cult classic film. But he's talking to Buster Poindexter. It's this guy who spends the day at the track. He's a complete degenerate gambler, and he has this like one day where he like gets all the horse races right. And he's talking to Buster Poindexter after he like just like literally took like $60,000 of his winnings and blew it again on the next race. And he turns to him and says, "I don't know, Trotter, I got a bad feeling about this." And Richard Dreyfuss's character responds like, no, in order to have a bad feeling, you had to have a good feeling. Therefore, you have no frame of reference. So,
that's awesome.
So I love that line from the movie of like, it just really, pinpoints this guy's character that he's like, just like always the naysayer and never has like a good thing, a good thought come to his mind.
Yeah, this is so great. As we kind of come to a close here, I just first of all want to say that yes, and is that's one of the reasons that I'll be married 20 years this year.
It's great wedding
and
advice too.
Is a really great way to stay married.
Did you say yes, ma'am?
Or and yes, yes, ma'am. Yes, and yes, ma'am. Either or.
Frederick, you just made more of his comment and heightened it.
We're learning.
I don't know if you heard about that.
We're learning. So I guess as we close, I would just like to ask you, Mike, if you could just leave our defenders listening just with some final thoughts here, encouragements, what should we do with this information? Anything that comes to mind that you have.
I was like so excited for Midwest UX in Chicago this year because that's like, spent 10 years living there. They had it at the Athenaeum Theater in Lakeview/Wrigleyville, which is where I like used to spend all of my time. And we ran the workshop, and one attendee, her name's Lindsay, she's in Michigan. She has taken some improv classes, and I'm hoping, through the workshops, that's like just a first step, a first introduction to improv and some of the stuff that it teaches. So I would encourage everybody to look up and see if you have an improv theater in your local city and go give it a try. A lot of them have drop-in classes now where you can just go and meet up with a bunch of random people who are taking, like a 2-hour drop-in class just to see what it's like. I was like, it warmed my heart when she got back to me and said she did her level one little recap show, and it was so much fun. And she mentioned that I'm seeing how this affects my mindset of how I'm approaching things. It's not necessarily like, if you take a workshop on CSS and you get some cool ideas of how to use some specific CSS, text to do something. She's like, it's approaching how I'm approaching things. And she's like, I'm actually seeing how I can apply it to like my life in general as well. And so, I'm a big believer that improv can make you a better person overall, not just, within UX. So that's probably my biggest takeaway. If you can find a theater near you, go jump in with both feet. You're going to meet a lot of really interesting people, a lot of people who take it, seriously because they want to be on stage and perform, other people who just wanted to try something new and different, and then in between. And it'll be really interesting to get their points of view and, bond with them while you're going through the classes and having fun. And then you kind of nice. See how other people are acting regularly in your life, and you're like, oh, improv's a lot more fun. I like hanging around my improv friends because they're all like super supportive, versus how everybody else is treating themselves and others.
That's so good. that's so good. Yeah, improv. This can only make us better people. You know, and like, there's so many benefits. You know, humility, right? Checking our ego at the door, bringing other people in to what we're doing, especially in the design process.
I would love if you could, and we'll obviously add this into the show notes, but if you could tell us how people could get a hold of you. What's your website? What's your Twitter handle?
Sure. Twitter is at Mike Gorgone. It's MikeGorgone.com is my personal website. And then the Improv UX site, Jim switched it over. So I think it's improvinaction.com/improvUX. And then it's Mike Gorgone on LinkedIn as well. And I am always willing and happy to answer improv questions. I usually probably talk everybody's ear off at the conferences, and my voice is actually not the strongest. So by the end of pretty much every conference, I think I sound a lot like Harvey Fierstein, to the point or either where I actually can't even like talk at all. So well,
better than sounding like Harvey Weinstein.
Touché.
Sorry, that was judgmental.
Woof.
Not acceptance.
That was not a good improv skill. Sorry, don't do what I did.
Yeah, so, yeah. But it does actually make, in the intermediate part, once it's not quite gone, it does make for a good Krusty the Clown imitation, so.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, hey, yeah, thank you so much, Mike. Really appreciate you joining with us today.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. I loved it. It was a great time.
Yeah, this is an incredible conversation, one that I have never addressed on the show, and that's why I'm really, really glad we did this. And I know many defenders listening are going to benefit greatly, and I know I have a feeling you have, Frederick, and so this has just been awesome. Mike, keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading the gospel of improv and UX, and last but not least, I just want to say, as always, fight on, my friend. My neural pathways really started connecting after I realized how conducive to team collaboration and creativity improv skills are in a team environment. Fun kills fear. I loved that takeaway from Mike. And I think that, again, safe environments are critical. When we feel safe to contribute and we don't feel judged, we're going to do our best work. And that is a fact. So I really, really like that takeaway. The reality is we're all improvising every day. We never really know what we're going to say in a meeting or a phone call. Do you still make phone calls? Acceptance, non-judgment, active listening, empathy. Do those sound like critical UX skills? Yes. And soft skills are complementary to not only to our jobs, of course, but to being a good human. I always say that being a great designer begins and ends with being a great human. Soft skills are hard, but they are worth it. And you know what? They give us a competitive edge over the rise of the bots that we are seeing. We'll always have that advantage over robots. I hope that this inspired you. Perhaps you might even go a step further like Mike did and find local improv classes to really level up in those areas. I've known other designers who have done that, who've taken improv classes and just loved the what it's done for their design careers. So it's really interesting. I hope you've been inspired by this. This has been very different. I've never addressed this on an episode before, but I'm really glad I did today. Frederick impressed me. He's kind of a natural at this, and either that or he rehearsed for months in advance after we figured out we're going to do this together, and he did that maybe to outshine me. Yes, and I'm not bitter. Not at all. Tweet your takeaways. I'm at User Defenders. Mike is at Mike Gorgone, and Frederick is at Frederick Weiss. And real quick, I want to do a thank you, a personal thank you. This is one of the reward tiers for the Patreon supporters. And so far there's 11 to date. There's 11 supporters, and I hope I haven't plateaued there. There's been a lot of folks tweeting it out, a lot of influencers in our field tweeting it out, and it's staying at 11. So I hope that I can convince you without pressuring you too much, but to help convince you to give to this show and to my efforts. Even as low as $5 a month will make a huge impact. If enough of you do that, that will help me to be able to keep making this show and keep this content coming. But I want to give a thank you to the folks that have joined the support. So let's start with Sarah Dennis. Thank you, Sarah, so much for your thoughtful support of this show. My buddy Nick Fink, and former super guest and influencer in our field, he's done a great deal, and Nick's been at this for a long time. I remember being in even on some email lists with him back in the early days, back in the late 90s, rubbing elbows with him, so to speak, on forums. So, Nick, thank you for your generous support. Nick's a master. He joined immediately at the highest tier, and thank you so much, man. And thanks for also your support on Twitter and getting the word out about this. Ibrahim Tanira. Ibrahim is an amazing fella. I just had a one-on-one with him yesterday. He's joined at the master level as well, which includes a one-on-one with me every month, 20 minutes. So we just met for the first time yesterday as I'm recording this. And Ibrahim's an awesome, awesome designer and inspiring fella, and he moved here from Pakistan, I think. Gosh, forgive me, Ibrahim, if I got that wrong, but he moved here recently to the States, and he's just a really great guy. Thanks, Ibrahim. And Brian Hinton also joined at the master level. Brian is a fellow co-host of the Thunder Nerds podcast, so he co-hosts with Frederick. And thank you so much, bud. I really appreciate your support. Jack Riddell, thank you, Jack. You've been a supporter and a listener for a while now, and you're also a UD community member. I appreciate your generous support as well, bud. Michelle Tan. Michelle became a sidekick recently. Michelle is a wonderful, enthusiastic listener and supporter. She's also a community member, and I just appreciate you so much, Michelle. And I also really appreciated your comment about my voice and how it's soothing to you. I really like that a lot. Thank you, Michelle. And my buddy Justin Dower, who I co-host his podcast, his Creative Culture podcast with. He was a former guest twice over now, and just a good, good human altogether. He wrote a great book called Cultivating a Creative Culture, which I highly recommend. Justin joined at the master level. Thank you, Justin, so much. Anastasia Moniva. Anastasia is a wonderful supporter. Thank you, Anastasia, for becoming a sidekick and also being a really wonderful UD community member as well. I appreciate you so much. Simon Alavisi is a master supporter at the $50 a month level. Thank you, Simon, for jumping in and helping me keep the lights on here. I really appreciate you. And last but not least, Chris Connors. Chris has been an amazing supporter and listener and enthusiast of the show for quite a while. And Chris, I just appreciate you so much, man. I appreciate all of your, your social sharing and, you know, getting the word out about the show and just all your wonderfully kind comments to me in general. So again, Defenders, I love to mention you on the show. I'd love to thank you for your support. And that's all the ones we have for now, but I'd love to thank you on the next episode, which is coming in 2 weeks, all about empathy as a design superpower. I'm going to be recording my second monologue episode. But yeah, check out the Patreon page, become a supporter, help me keep doing this, because I really, truly can't do it without you. I've come to the conclusion. Go to userdefenders.com/support. And that's it for today. Thank you so much, Defenders, for listening and continuing to be on this journey with me. I really, you're why I do this. You are. And so thank you. And last but not least, finally, I just want to say, as always, fight on, my friends.